Welcome to Social Geek Radio. This is Deb Evans coming to you live from Deb Evans Consulting and Social Geek Radio Studios.
And Jack Munson in the Chicago Kego offices and Social Geek Radio Studios North. How you doing tonight, Deb?
I'm doing great. As always, I'm very excited about this podcast and this episode.
And we've got
is there anything better than Wednesday, Jack?
Oh, not at all. Not at all. I was just thinking, Social Geek North, we actually have a guest who for once is further north than me. So
that's
true. We'll get to our guest in just a minute. But I know you've got something LinkedIn oriented tonight. For Geek It Out segment. So hit me.
I do. So there's a LinkedIn ProFinder, and there's two ways to find it, which, you know, with all social platforms today, I think there's always more than one way to find it. If you're on your LinkedIn profile itself, and if you go to Interest, the tab that says Interest, you'll see Companies, Groups, SlideShare, Learning, and then there's at the very end, it's called Freelance Marketplace. If you forget that and you want to go to linkedin.com/profinder, P-R-O, finder, what this is that LinkedIn, and I don't know, I don't think it's only a few weeks that it's been around, but it's a way to find a project and have, look for and hire a freelancer to help you. So when you go to ProFinder, you'll see that it'll say take your project from to do to done. And in the search, you search for something that you need to hire somebody for. So you're going to see a page. If you scroll down on the ProFinder, it'll say what do you need done. You know, it's easier if you just scroll down to the bottom. You can see it says design, writing, editing, accounting, marketing, and there's several topics. My gut says is that this is going to expand even further. So you can look for that freelance person. What they've done is that within your own LinkedIn profile, they're going to find somebody that is experienced in marketing or experienced in graphic design, and you're actually searching within LinkedIn. This is great, and if you want to find somebody, but what I'm looking at is registering myself as that person that can be hired. Now to do that on the LinkedIn ProFinder, and that this one is not so easy to find. So when you're on linkedin.com/profinder, you're going to see your own LinkedIn profile at the top.
Right.
And I'm glad this is recorded so that people can go back and look at it while they're on LinkedIn.
Right.
When
pause and go back 15 seconds.
Pause and go back.
If you're having trouble finding that page.
If you want to register yourself as a pro, under your LinkedIn name, your profile, you're going to get that drop down, and it says, are you a pro? You click on are you a pro, and you walk through the steps of registering yourself as a pro. And I did that earlier today. So what will happen is when you go to that and you want to manage that account or you want to register, when I completed the information and I put in that I thought I was an expert or I know about digital marketing services, social media marketing, I filled all that out, and then I received something from LinkedIn that says, please give us, it said 1 to 2 months to be notified. It was like if you remember going back to do the published post, you actually had to apply to do the published post.
Yeah.
I know somebody that completed this and they received information back in 2 days.
Oh, okay.
So I'm hoping in 2 days I'm going to be registered as a pro and that somebody might be able to find me.
Nice. But, now, how are the categories on this? Is it specific towards marketing and design type people, or is it really across the board?
It's across the board, and those categories I do believe will expand. Right now there's only 2, 4, 6, 8, there's like 12 categories, home improvement, photography, business consulting, financial services. There's not a lot of categories yet. Under marketing, then there's subcategories, advertised consulting, SEM consulting, social media marketing. So there's, like a dozen categories with some subcategories. So we'll see. I mean, I think this is evolving or will evolve into something.
Cool.
It's LinkedIn. I mean, so we always tell professionals you should be on LinkedIn. My advice to LinkedIn users is, you know, make sure that you've got recommendations, because my thought is that LinkedIn is now going to look at Deb's profile and say, okay, she says she does digital media marketing or social media marketing. Does she have recommendations? You know, does my profile support what I say I can be hired to do? So we'll see how this plays out.
Very cool. So again, it's called LinkedIn ProFinder.
ProFinder.
All right. And if anybody has any experience with this, or they try it and they get any good results, hit us on our LinkedIn company page, or maybe our Facebook page, mm-hmm. and let us know, because I'd love to hear how it's working for people. So cool. Right. Geek it out, Deb. Love it.
Thanks. Okay. All right. So let's let our guest in.
Yes. Open the green room door and let's say hello to the president of Martin Waxman Communications. It's Martin Waxman. How you doing?
I'm doing well. And, you know, when you said you were in the social geek studios, I thought, well, yeah, I guess I'm in a north studio.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's slightly north of you in Toronto, although for Canada, I'm in the south.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
Yeah, the balmy south part of Canada. So mm-hmm. we are so thrilled to have you on tonight, Martin. The one of the very first podcasts that I started listening to way back in the good old days was Inside PR. And you've been part of that public relations oriented podcast for how long now?
Many years. I can tell you one thing. The podcast itself had its 10th anniversary. I've been doing it for about 7.5 years.
Wow.
Which is a long time. In podcast years, I think that's like 50. Or right. I mean in real years.
Oh, yeah. We're still relatively new compared to Inside PR. So.
Yeah, 6 years. He's an oldie. That's pretty cool.
Right. Very cool. So, Martin, you're one of the people who've really made an excellent move from traditional public relations and communications and crisis communications into digital marketing. It seems like there are so many people who just never really made that move forward. Are you still doing a lot of traditional PR, or are you really focused on digital stuff now?
I'm more focused on digital, and when I do have PR clients, what I try to do is bring them along to the digital world. I had one client, this is kind of an amusing story. I used to do publicity for them. So they were a chain of comedy clubs, and it was the chain's 40th anniversary, and they called me and said, hey, can you do what you used to do back then, which was get just lots of attention in media because you could do that. And I said, no, I can't, but why don't we do something in social and on your blog? And they were interested in that. And they said, but we still want something traditional. So I thought, okay, how do I do that? I was able to get them a Wire story, but, you know, you pitch that differently with digital assets. So shots of comedians, like photos of Robin Williams when he was starting out because he used to perform there, or photos of Sam Kinison and old videos of comedians who kind of were nothing or new and then suddenly made it. And suddenly you have these digital assets that make it a much more interesting story for traditional media. So I think it's really important to figure out how you can blend those worlds together, because traditional still is important, but really digital is, I think, should be first. And in many ways, mobile should be first.
Mobile should be first. Interesting. So is that something that brands are still struggling with? I mean, it seems like that's all we talk about is, you know, mobile, but are brands still just not quite there yet?
I think so. I think some brands are doing a great job. I think the shift, and it's really a mindset shift, is in learning to think small screen first. And so many times what we do is when we have a digital experience or a web experience, whether it's a blog, a newsroom, a website, you know, anything, we think about these large screens and then we take away or reduce for the mobile experience. And as a result, a lot of mobile experiences are kind of second rate, or they're too complex. The desire paths, in other words, the shortcuts, just don't work the way they do on a bigger screen. And so I think we all need to make that shift to the small screen. That doesn't mean shifting away from creativity, but figuring out how can we come up with this amazing creative experience for the small screen and then building onto that for the larger screens. In some ways, it's similar to what TV had to do when it started in the, I guess, 40s and 50s, and trying to adapt, you know, the big screen experience for movies, how do they adapt?
Cool. Well, I really love that. Think small screen first.
Yeah, what... Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's tough to do because we're so much in that, you know, widescreen, big screen mindset, partially because, you know, we're still sitting at our computers pretty much all day if you're in communications or marketing to work, but we really are on our smartphones all the time, and they're always with us.
Right. And I guess that's what I was going to say. That's where people are designing the blog or writing the blog or, you know, making the video. They're sitting there on their massive monitor, you know, sitting in their space, and they really need to pull out the phone and think, okay, this is what the consumer is going to watch this on. So excellent. Love that. What else are you seeing brands struggle with right now before we get into, you know, some of the positive stuff?
I think the notion that we've moved kind of away from hub and spoke publishing. So you create content on your own site or blog and then you push it out through social and digital channels and traditional channels to this multi-platform publishing world. And you see it all the time. You see the New York Times, for example, is publishing not only on its site, but it publishes on Facebook instant articles. It publishes, you know, in multiple places. I saw a presentation with the social media lead of BuzzFeed Canada, and he said, and this number just made my eyes pop out, that 75% of the content BuzzFeed Canada, I'm assuming this is just BuzzFeed in general, produces, is not published on their site.
Wow.
And it's just a different way of thinking about it. In a way, it reminds me of a retail model where you have a flagship store, that's your own, but then you have all these different, you know, outpost stores, whether they're in malls or they're outlets, you know, and so you need to think about the kind of content that you're putting out there and how that is differentiated from what you might have on your home. And it's really, really challenging. It's very complex. It also means that you need to constantly be thinking about, you know, how do I take this one idea and get it out there across platforms.
So let's move into pushing out across multiple platforms or maybe some other things that that you're seeing a positive impact on. So aside from using the multiple places that you're going to publish the same content, what else really seems to be, you know, just working and running on all cylinders right now?
I think video is just doing amazing, and live stream video is just seems to be really catching on in a way that is pretty exciting when you think about it. I mean, on the fun side, you have BuzzFeed on Facebook Live doing that last rubber bands around the watermelon, trying to make it explode, and just putting on more rubber bands, and people watch for 45 minutes. And then you have Chewbacca Mom, you know, mom who unboxes a Chewbacca mask in her car, puts it on, gets really hysterical in a way that is, you know, you really, really empathize with her, and it's quite engaging. And she has like 180+ million views. She's been on talk shows. She's, you know, it's incredible. She's been to Facebook. A university in her state gave her and her family scholarships to college. I mean, it's just incredible all the things that happened from there. And then,
and
of
most
course,
importantly, she has her own action figure now. So,
and
made it in the Star Wars universe.
I know it's incredible. And then, of course, on the more serious side, you have all the instances of people live streaming news events. So, you know, it what happened in Nice was live stream. That's awful. The police shootings that have been happening in the U.S., those have been live streamed. And there's so much stuff happening so quickly that Facebook, I believe last week, had to come out with a policy as to what type of content it would deem acceptable or not acceptable, because so much of this is really graphic and violent. And what they said is it is all about context, you know, for it. So if you're there and you see a shooting and you're saying, oh, that's really great, look at that, look at the kind of gun he has, that's not acceptable. But if you're there saying, oh, my gosh, my boyfriend, my girlfriend was just shot, look at this, that is deemed acceptable. That said, if one person, just one, reports a video, a live video to Facebook, they will investigate it. So that's all it takes, just one voice to make Facebook aware of it. So I think there's a lot of potential in live video. Mary Meeker, who did the 2016 State of the Internet, well, she does her State of the Internet report every year, said something really interesting. We kind of come full circle. Like, we started in TV as live TV, then it became recorded and programmed and scheduled, then we kind of moved to on-demand TV, and then semi-live like Snapchat, and now it's going back to live again. I find that just fascinating, except that in previous incarnations, it was the broadcasters that could produce it because you need a lot of resources. Now live TV can be produced by anyone, anywhere.
Right. We are broadcasters. And I think we talk a lot about Facebook Live here on Social Geek Radio. And the one thing that keeps coming back to me is it's not a zero-sum game when you're looking at the Facebook news feed. So the more live videos that get out there and get put to the top of the stack, right, and the organic reach on these, as one of our friends describes it, is old school Facebook, right? You can reach everybody, reach all of your followers with these live videos. The more of those that go to the top of the stack, the fewer and fewer text only or text plus link type Facebook posts are showing up. And we're seeing just this horrible organic reach. We thought it was bad last year, and now it's even worse. Anything that isn't a live video, just really getting pushed down to the bottom of the totem pole.
Well, Facebook's a media company. I think that's, you know, they've told us they were a media company, and they really are. And media companies make money by not necessarily by running an organization's news for free. They do it by charging for ads.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, if you're not a customer, you're a product. So let's talk a little bit more about another Facebook feature that I think you've been using quite a bit, and that's the Facebook closed groups. Are you doing much with clients? Are you doing things with other types of media that you're publishing on Facebook with the closed groups?
Some with clients, but the example I'd like to give is one with an organization that I'm a member of. Actually, I'm the chair of it this year. It's PRSA's Counselors Academy. So it's a section of the Public Relations Society of America, and it's geared to independent agency owners and leaders, and really focused on trends and the business of running an agency, whether it's one or two people, you know, it's a consultancy, all the way up to 50, 75 people. And what we do is we have a fantastic group on Facebook where we have all these discussions, and it's really, really active. And people will post questions if they have a staffing question, if they have an HR question, if they have a client question, you know, this client asked me to do this, I'm not really sure. Do you have any expertise in it, or have you been asked to do something? Is it ethical? Is it not ethical? We have these great discussions. We also have some fun discussions. I just posted a video that a friend of mine and one of our members, Dana Hewins, did. She and her team produced a short video on how Pokemon Go works. So that goes on the page, and then there's discussion around that. And it's a really great community. Contrast that to the Counselors Academy discussion board that PRSA has set up, and nothing wrong with PRSA, but it's not that intuitive. It's not easy to navigate. People aren't there as much.
Right.
Most of us are on Facebook.
Right. And I think that's the big difference is you see so many people come up with these closed networks or, you know, God forbid, a company intranet site. And the thing is, your associates and your members and your team members, they're not there. They're not hanging out there. You know, if you do it on Facebook, that's where the world is living right now.
Yeah. 1.6 billion people. So it's easy to get people there and to get people engaged there. So we really like that. And it's something that we're going to continue to grow because we post a question, we have the news, we want to ask our members something, we know that they'll see it there.
Yeah. You know, what's very cool about that too is in, you know, the old days, I always talk about the old days of being, you know, 5 years ago. If members of the Counselors Academy had something that they were really interested in learning about, or they wanted to hear what some of the other members were doing, they would, you know, pretty much have to wait until the annual event. And you guys always have really cool annual events, but you might not want to wait 9 or 10 months till that event to find out how someone is doing something, because, you know, if it's like the Pokemon marketing issue that you mentioned, I mean, who knows what that's going to be like 7 months from now. So the fact that you can jump on and have that conversation in real time, that's really a great way to use the closed groups. That's fantastic.
And yeah, and the great thing about Facebook is everybody knows how to use it. You're not trying, and we have to learn so many new things all the time. I was just talking to my wife about that. Oh my gosh, another new platform. I've got to learn how to use it and then decide whether or not I need to use it.
Right.
And sometimes that feels daunting, but Facebook, you know what to do there. You know how to post a photo. You know how to post. You know how to post a video. We just are comfortable there. Plus, it is just, it's a social environment. So you can be serious, but you can also have some fun there. And I think for any group, you want to have a mix of, you know, serious business stuff, but also some fun stuff and some entertaining things. So you have a good reason to go there, you know, rather than just feel it's an obligation.
Right. Any new platforms, I usually just wait a while and see if Facebook is going to buy them and incorporate them into Facebook.
Yeah.
So then I, you know, let's move on to the other side of the coin. Do you see brands doing anything right now that you just are advising them? Don't put resources, don't put time into this, whether it's a platform or, you know, maybe some other form of media that people are sort of looking at that you don't really think is a great place to be right now?
Well, for me, it's something that people call, you know, content pollution, or what I like to call junk publishing. And that is feeling that you have to put out a certain volume of content in order to keep people engaged. Yeah, you do have to have a schedule, but most organizations, or many organizations, don't have the resources to be like a media outlet like the New York Times or BBC or CNN that can just pump up tons of stuff. They don't have that big a team. And I think all organizations need to just stop and say, is this great, before pressing publish, and start producing and publishing things that are of higher value to their audience. I think that would benefit everyone and kind of stop us all from feeling so overwhelmed, hopefully.
Very good. Excellent.
Yeah, good advice.
What trends do you see happening for the second half of 2016? Anything that you're recommending to your clients or any of your colleagues that they really need to check out and be a part of for the second half of this year?
You mean aside from Pokemon Go?
Right. You know, a quick story about Pokemon Go. This is something that has been around for what, a week and a couple of days now. I was speaking in an event on Tuesday of this week, and one of the things that it was a group of marketing people in the franchise community. One of the things that we were all chatting about was, wow, you know, maybe there's some way we can use this whole Pokemon Go experience to drive more people into our, you know, pizza shops and fast food restaurants. Mm-hmm. By the afternoon, I had already seen my first couple of blogs on, you know, here's how to drive more people into your pizza shop. And by 11 o'clock that night, I saw my first blog on here's why you don't want to drive people into your pizza shop using Pokemon Go. So I think we hit the entire cycle within about 24 hours of that being launched.
Yeah. Well, you know, we don't have it in Canada yet. In the same way that LinkedIn Pro, we don't have that either. I was trying to set it up for myself, and I couldn't register. All I could do was say, put my name on a list so they'll notify me when I can register when it comes here. That's one of the drawbacks of being in Canada. We're not exactly market one. We like to think we are, but we get things later. But I think the idea of augmented reality is fascinating. And I think one of the great things about Pokemon Go is it combined what Foursquare, you know, that location check-in app wanted to be with a really fun way to have kind of play a game that interacts with the environment. And I'm hoping that we'll start to see more interesting augmented experiences. It'll probably take a while, but, you know, that extra layer, because really that's where marketing and communications can come in, because it almost is like a layered experience in the way that communications or telling stories are on the environment. So I really like that. I'm fascinated by all the chatbots that are coming out. They're not that great, but on Facebook Messenger, for example, you can follow CNN News, and it sends you messages, and you can ask it questions like tech news, and then it'll say, here's some stories you might like, and give you a number of stories that you can scroll through. You can read the stories right on Facebook Messenger. You can share the stories right on Facebook Messenger, and it seems like this, not quite AI, artificial intelligence isn't there yet, and it does scare me, but this smarter machine-human interaction seems to be happening, and we'll see where that goes. I find it quite interesting and fascinating and scary at the same time.
Yeah, and I think if it takes off, and it probably will, but if it really takes off into the direction that you're talking about, it's not going to be 5 years down the road. This is going to be something that just, you know, the match has been lit, and here comes the gasoline. So this could go up really, really quickly.
Yeah, and I think it's different from virtual reality in that you don't have to put a set of goggles on your face. One thing about virtual reality, it's a great experience if you've tested it out. I was able to test out like on a virtual roller coaster in these chairs that moved, and it was really fun and pretty exciting to do that. But, you know, there I was. My wife was sitting next to me, and we were both doing this, but I was alone, essentially. I could hear everybody, but there you are alone. Whereas augmented reality seems to be more social because you're not cut off from the real world.
Yeah, excellent. Martin, in the few minutes we have left, and I should mention we're speaking with Martin Waxman tonight on Social Geek Radio. Martin, how many or tell us about any fun stuff you're working on for the rest of the year. Any cool projects or campaigns or things you're involved with in these days?
Yeah, well, what I've been doing a lot of is digital and social media training and crisis training. So I go into an organization, spend a day there, and kind of teach them how to behave during a crisis or how to really optimize and be creative about the content they produce. And in the crisis workshop, for example, I'll give them actual scenarios and run teams through a plan in real time that they have to present within 2.5 hours. So it gives them a really good experience of what it's like to be in a crisis, because there is that time pressure on it. And they need to present to the C-suite, so they have to make sure what they do is really well thought out from a strategic perspective. And it also kind of identifies who on the team is really good at thinking on their feet and acting, who's cool, who might get a little too stressed. So it offers the organization a number of good insights. And, you know, you can't run a marathon if you just, you know, walk around the block every day. You've got to train for it. And it's the same with a crisis or with anything. You've got to practice it to at least get better so that if it happens, you're prepared.
Very cool. If any of our listeners are interested in finding out more about this crisis training, it sounds fascinating. I love sort of the real-time aspect of that. That's very cool. But if people want to learn more about it and maybe see if it would be a good fit for their organization, where can they find out more?
Well, they can find out more about it on my website, martinwaxman.com. There's a contact form. You can shoot me an email from there or find me on Twitter @MartinWaxman.
@MartinWaxman. Easy enough. Martin, thanks so much for joining us on Social Geek Radio tonight. I hope you'll come back again and talk about some trends in the not-so-distant future.
Thank you. I would love to, and it's been great talking to you both.
All right.
Thanks, Martin.
Thanks so much. Good night, everybody.
Good night.